Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hello, hello. Good morning, Ashley.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, Hayley.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Nice to see you again.
You too.
Yeah. This is our first time connecting, I guess, well, not in person, but face to face in the new year. So
yeah. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah. 2023. Hard to believe.
Flying by.
Yeah, it does. I was somewhere the other day listening to something, and somebody was talking about asking how many people in the room remembered 23 years ago when the whole Y2K thing was happening, and people were, you know, I guess on the edge of their seat. And my kids find that hilarious, like that was even a concern, I guess. But anyway, so yeah, a number of us remembered that and we're just kind of chuckling. So
yeah, definitely.
Here we are 23 years later, and yeah, everything's good.
So yeah, we're still here.
Yeah, we're still here. Computers are clearly working. Anyway, so to get on topic a little bit, we're talking about joy today. And I feel like joy is an interesting topic because I think it gets, when people think about joy, they also think about happiness. And in some ways, they're the same. And then I think in some ways, they're not. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that today. But I'm also kind of interested in how we think about joy, I guess, in the context of family life and unschooling, and maybe even just in like our own self-directed life, just sort of being intentional about looking for things that make bring us joy, or making decisions that feel like they're in the direction of joy for us. But something else that came up for me when I was thinking about this whole idea of joy is how focused our society is on being happy. You know, we have lots of songs about being happy, and I feel like there's a big value put on smiling, being happy, being in a good mood. And I mean, I certainly value those things as well. But I find when you look at something, because to me, joy is maybe a bit deeper. And so I think then when we look at people making decisions that are really good for them and that might bring them like a deeper sense of themselves or a sense of joy, I feel then sometimes it's a little harder to do that because sometimes that involves stepping outside of the box a little bit. So yeah, I don't know if any of that, that's just kind of been on my mind, is this idea of happiness and joy and this focus on being in a good mood and being happy and putting on a happy face. And yet sometimes when people move toward those decisions that might bring them that deeper joy, and I think maybe there's some pieces around self-directed learning that we can dip into around this, that just feels a little bit harder. So I don't know if that resonates for anybody, or I think, as I said to you, just as we were logging in today, I had meant to look up a little bit more around various definitions of joy, because a lot of them do just sort of seem to be synonymous with happy. But for me, I think of them a little bit differently.
I'd agree, Erin. I think it's funny because they are, yeah, on the one hand, you think maybe they're the same thing. But then on the other hand, there is something about joy. I think some people feel a bit guilty about feeling joyful sometimes. Maybe like joyful is a bit frivolous, and I guess, you know, that links very closely to the whole idea of unschooling. And I know that I'm sure A lot of us have come up against the idea that if you're following your joy, then maybe you're not setting your children up for a realistic perception of what real life is. And there's a lot of talk of kids, you know, you've kind of got to get them used to the hardness of life, and maybe life shouldn't all be about joy. And that's kind of sad, really, isn't it? It sounds a little bit sad when we're that joy should be something that maybe we should that anybody should feel guilty about, or that that it's not something that we should be striving for with our, you know, our one life that we've got, and that, you know, we're hoping to do the best with it, that you'd think joy would be a good thing. And obviously it is a good thing. Lots of us are striving for joy. But I think there is that element of that as well, of somehow maybe feeling a bit guilty sometimes that it's not a realistic thing.
Yeah, it makes me think a little bit about growing up myself, actually, and kind of, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, it probably wasn't from any of the adults, parents, teachers, but this idea that anyone of any age had to get stuff done or get stuff, like be productive, whatever it was, right? Like you had to get a hard day of work in, whether at work or at school. And then like the joyful stuff came afterwards, almost like you had to earn it. Or you could be in that joyful moment without feeling guilty because you were productive earlier in the day, or you accomplished things earlier in the day, and valuing those two things differently. It made me think also about, I was listening to Pam Larikia talk on a podcast recently, and I really liked, she talks a lot about joy, and I was listening to her talk about what she means when she talks about, like when she says living joyfully, which I agree, I think is something we all wish for, or maybe all strive for. But she was talking about something that just made a lot of sense that I think goes along with what we're talking about here. And it was this idea that living joyfully isn't about things never feeling heavy, but rather realizing that there can be both. So even in hard moments, you can find joy. So it's not a matter, I think she was talking about, it's not always a matter of once you figure everything out, then life will be joyful. Once you have all the answers, then finally we'll get to a place that feels more joyful. But rather, it's kind of maybe what you were saying, Erin, like it's deeper than that. And it's figuring out how to find the joy, even in more challenging times or in just everyday life. So I appreciate what she shares around living joyfully, because I think to me, for myself, I can realistically see how that's more possible, I guess. I'll leave it there. But I really thought that that was a helpful way for myself anyway, to think about, well, how does a family overall live joyfully? And that was helpful.
I really like that, actually. I like the, because there's the thing in fairy tales, I suppose, isn't there? The idea of people living happily ever after. And almost that's kind of a passive thing, isn't it? It's kind of the circumstances will all come together and you'll have this happy ever after that you don't really need to do, you know, it will just be there, and perhaps you don't need to work at it. It's just happy ever after, great, done. Whereas joyful is, being joyful, I guess, to me, it feels like it's more of an active thing. It's something that that we intentionally can look for. And I think there can be joy even in really difficult times. And I mean, certainly when you're putting a lot of effort into to something, that's often when, even though things are hard and they taking a lot of effort, sometimes those are the most joyful moments, because we, you know, they feel really worthwhile, even though they're really hard, mm-hmm. I think. And when we're really sad about things, sometimes there's a lot of joy that can still be found in terms of the deep connections that you can have with other people, and the Yeah, I guess in the connection and in about experiencing deep emotional experiences, I guess. There can be a lot of joy in that, even when they don't seem on face value to be the happiest of times or the happiest of experiences.
Haley, that is so funny. I was just, if you hadn't said that, when Ashley was talking, that's exactly what I was thinking of, is the happily ever after reference, and just how, yeah, I mean, exactly what you said. It's so true. And I think too, it's this idea for me of like, there's with a happily ever after, if you think about a fairy tale, there's always a resolution, right? So usually they're with the person they've fallen in love with. And usually there's something that's been resolved where some of the kind characters, you know, come together. And then usually whatever danger has been present throughout the story is completely banished. You know, that danger doesn't exist anymore. And so, yeah, there's the sense of this resolution. You kind of check the boxes and now it's all good. And, you know, I think that I fall into that a lot in my life, where I will think, okay, after this day and this day, then I'll be able to relax and enjoy myself. And once this week is over, if I can get through this week, then I'll relax and enjoy myself or whatever. And I wouldn't say I do that in big ways in my life, but I do it in small. I would say I do that during the week. And, you know, I'm even thinking of more modern movies and books that aren't quite as simplistic as the fairy tales, where it's like they ride off into the sunset and it's all good. So often, I don't know, often they're more complex. Like often there's still a little bit of sadness at the end, but there still is a sense of resolution of some kind. And so I think that really goes back to what you said, Ashley, that, you know, our lives are never resolved. One thing gets resolved, or we think it does, but even if it does, something else pops up. There's no kind of resolution that just keeps happening. So yeah, I love the way that Pam weaves that through a lot of her writing and podcasting, actually, is that idea around joy. So yeah, I wish I'd looked up her definition or some of the pieces. I think she really has done some really good pieces around it. And the other thing that came to mind for me, Ashley, when you were talking, I can remember my husband saying, he had this mantra of work now, play later. I can remember that even just when we were like getting our house set up and like maybe we wanted to go somewhere, but we had painting to do, like from our earliest days, I can remember. And it was very good natured. It was just like work now, play later. And this was something I think that a teacher had passed on to him. And it's not that that's necessarily a bad thing. Like sometimes we do have to get A done before we can do B, but it's funny how we assume. I think people tend to assume that, so work now, play later, that work would have no joy, and play, I mean, play usually has joy, absolutely, just by its nature. But it's interesting how even there, how we start to define, where do we find joy? So do we find joy when we're doing work? And maybe that ties into some of the pieces around unschooling, that the assumption is that if people are living joyfully and they're choosing what they're doing and they have a lot of autonomy, that there isn't work involved or there's not a high level of focus or effort. So that's the other piece that comes to mind for me around that.
Yeah, if I can just quickly, I don't have much to add there, but it just makes me think about how it's not about striving to have every moment feel joyful. It's just slowing down and being intentional to consider, where can we find the joy during the day, but also stepping back and being intentional, looking at how we set up our days ahead to make sure that there's opportunities for us to see joy, if that makes sense.
Yes. And I think too, for me too, what's been helpful, not that I have this all figured out at all, but something that I try to do is not just I'm trying to think what the word is, not to just assume that time isn't worth anything if I'm a little bit stressed out about something. Or so just as an example, I had a couple of telephone appointments today that I wasn't really looking forward to. And so my tendency is to write off the whole morning. It's kind of like, okay, I'll just get through until we get these phone calls and then I can talk to Haley and Ashley, right? This is like my reward or whatever. But that's my tendency, is to just kind of go on autopilot until I can get those things done. And what I've been trying to do more of is identify ahead of time. So what are the pieces that bring me joy and bring me peace? And how can I take, even if it's a minute or a minute or two, right? So, you know, let's say there's a phone call coming in at 9:30 and it's 9:20. Well, I don't need to write off that whole 10 minutes just because I have a phone call coming in that I'm not that, you know, keen on. And so spending that time just being intentional about something else, right? Whether it's, you know, sending a nice email to somebody, or like this morning, I went out and added a bit of extra food to the bird feeder because I could see the cardinals coming down. And that just, for me, I used that few minutes in an intentionally joyful way. Whereas if I'm not intentional about it, I just go on autopilot until I can get those done. And it's almost like I don't value those minutes because they're leading up to something that I'm not looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally relate to that, Erin. And I think that there's something they say, isn't there, about how the fact that we, you know, as humans, we have a negative bias, and that maybe for our ancestors, the people who were running around about how happy and joyful they were all the time were the ones that maybe got, you know, eaten by a bear or something. And whereas the ones that were a little bit more pessimistic and were thinking there might be danger around every corner, maybe they had a little bit more survivalness about them, and they kind of, so whether that's something that got passed down in our genes or whether it was like a necessary thing for us to survive. So I think it's true, we do have to be that bit more intentional, don't we? It's maybe not something that comes natural to us. Maybe it is something that we need to work on a little bit, looking for the joy in different situations. And I know I catch myself when I'm in that kind of, oh, I've got all this washing up to do, or I've got this telephone call to make that I don't want to make, or I've got whatever. And it's so easy, isn't it, to get down that kind of negative frame of mind. And sometimes it is, I suppose, the more it's a practice, isn't it? And I guess the more you practice, or the more reminders that you have about you, sometimes you just catch yourself and think, right, okay, take a deep breath. And we don't have to write the whole morning off because of this, that, you know, because we've got an appointment later or whatever. It's an interesting one, but I think it's definitely something that if we do practice it, it can make our lives just, so much more enjoyable, can't it?
Yeah, this is something I feel like I am learning. Like, I'm in my late 30s and I wish I had picked up more of this a lot sooner. And I keep that in mind when I think about, obviously, like my own kids, right? And what I can maybe try to model for them now as I'm figuring it out. But just what you were saying there, Haley, I was reading something very recently and I don't remember where it was from, but I was reading about stress. So like what you were saying about how like it's that stress is built into us. And it was talking about how stress isn't all bad. It can be really, it's really helpful. It's there to help us be prepared for whatever. Right. But it made me think about how, I think what it was talking about was it's too much stress, too much overwhelm, which is different for everyone too. So that's what I've been trying to practice more and become more aware of myself, because I found if I was feeling stressed, I'd feel overwhelmed. And I, like what you were saying, Erin, I'd get lost in it. Like I would, those minutes would go by, or those hours would go by, or a whole day would go by and be kind of lost to that stress that I was feeling. So it's like that practicing, and it can be pretty simple things, but I almost, you know, I'm learning from other people, whether it's listening to other people talk about what works for them, to, you know, what are the tools they have almost, so that when they are feeling that stress, they can kind of get out of their head and into that present moment, which I actually think that my kids help me with that quite a bit. Whereas not long ago, I would have thought the kids made it harder at times. Like if I was feeling really stressed or overwhelmed, I would have thought, I want them to go with someone else who isn't feeling this way so that I know that they're okay and I can just focus on getting through this stressful period. But really now it's trying, and that goes back to, I think, living this life together and figuring out how to do it together. But yeah, for myself, like thinking about obstacles that we can face when we're looking for joy, stress is one that pops up for me. But it's, yeah, having that awareness of, well, stress is actually important for me to have. It's just about figuring out how to make sure it doesn't take over so that I can't find like those bits of joy that we can find every day, like what you were just sharing. Those are great examples, Erin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder too, Haley, to your point about survival and being ready, and for me, I'm thinking about like adrenaline, right? So I think that's a big piece for me, is that if I have something coming up that I'm nervous about or I'm anxious about, it's that my it's I can feel my adrenaline, right? I can feel it so much in my body leading up to something, and I wonder. I wonder though, in these modern times, well, I feel like I already know the answer to this. I feel like there's just a low lying adrenaline going on time, so that, you know, Haley, in simpler times, we always talk about simpler times. I mean, I think people have always had, there's always been complexity and difficulty in life, but I think people were more present in their environment. I think we're in such a fast paced society that even if we're consciously slowing down and intentionally slowing down, then there's almost a guilt about that. Like it's the norm has been to be busy and to be moving and to have your adrenaline going. So, you know, I think about that and how it relates to de-schooling. And is there anything in that for me that of so many years of waking up and having hours of kind of being somewhere I didn't want to be. I know for a lot of kids, you know, maybe they're more extroverted and they're maybe thriving more in school. And I think outwardly, I probably looked like I was thriving, but I think school was very performative for me, not just academically, but even just like personality wise, I had to get my energy up to be at school all day. You know, to do the bus ride, the school all day, the bus ride home, babysitters, whatever. It was a long part of my existence that involved being on and being on and being on. And so I, you know, I do think about that for myself, is some of that de-schooling, it's so ingrained in me to wake up in the morning and think, okay, what do I, you know? And so it's like this evening time is this, I mean, as a kid, I remember it being this distant land when I could finally relax, right? Or like late afternoon. And so is that just still very inherent in the way that I wake up and think about the day, that I have to kind of actively, I have to actively find ways to move through that. And I think I think we get better at it with practice for sure, but it's interesting how long that stays. For me, at least, I feel that it's very rooted in that for myself.
Yeah, you just made me think about de-schooling. I mean, we know that it's something that goes on and on, but I think, I mean, we've been home-edding now, and I can't even remember, is it 12 years? I can't remember, quite a long time. Anyway, I remember very much in the early years, the whole idea of school times, you know, between 9 and 3 or whatever, there was an anxiety, I know, at the beginning of if my children were in the front room having too much fun between between school times, would that, you know, would that reflect badly on me? I remember that being a process of de-schooling, definitely, that I had to go through. The whole idea that other people might be judging me, and the same about going to the park, I guess, between 9 and 3, if you're in the park having a great time, that other people may be maybe judging that, that maybe joy, like you said, Ashley, about joy comes after you've done all this hard work. And yet I think the more we learn about learning, and I know that studies that have been done on babies, and that more and more that we understand about learning, we see that so much that joy is so integral really to learning, and that tiny babies, when they are, you know, literally connections are forming in their brain when they're experiencing joy, and the more interactions between babies and their carers, the more their brains start lighting up and getting more growing the brain through these joyful experiences. And I think it's so, yeah, it is so sad that we have to go through that de-schooling and realize that actually it is okay to have some joy between 9 and 3.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Haley. I found that stuff so helpful to learn about as like an unschooling parent. And I feel like, I mean, so I would read about that, and I had that understanding, I guess, in theory, but now like I can watch my kids. Like I think about my 6-year-old and how he's learning, and how he's been learning like for a while now. And it's through his interest in animals. He's just really interested in animals. He finds animals fascinating, and he can spend hours every day. And this has been going on for a long time. Learning about animals. And so I see it, I can see all that like learning and like that learning happening, and all the different things that he's taking in. You could break it down into subjects easily, right, when you think about the topic of animals. So it's not, you know, it's not just a matter of him learning animal facts, but it's that he's learning all of this stuff while he's experiencing joy. So having that like understanding of like what that's doing with his brain, almost like as an unschooling parent, I can be like, okay, we're good. It's a little bit of reassurance, I guess. But I feel like we have that knowledge. The research is there to show that, you know, what's going on when we're living and learning with like through joyful moments, like that's such a great thing for all of us. But our society, we haven't really changed enough to match that. And I'll just quickly add, I don't know that I feel it so much anymore, maybe a bit, but certainly where we live, we will often be across the street at our park on a school day. And just by, you know, the comments or the questions that we get with people who are often seniors around here, you know, they're at home retired and they're out walking the dog, and they see my two guys playing around at the playground, and they're sometimes, they're like, that's lovely, that's amazing. Many of them feel better about it and more okay with it when they find out that my background's teaching. That makes sense then, right? Okay, well, that's great that you can do that. But certainly there's other people that are just like, shouldn't you be in school right now though? Shouldn't you be at school learning? And they're very, you know, coming across like they're uncomfortable with it. So I don't worry about it too much anymore, because of that, knowing that, you know, oh, they're learning a lot. So I appreciate you pointing that part out, because it is something I think a lot of homeschool parents have to think about, or come up against this idea of like, where are my homeschool kids or unschool kids when it's during school time?
And yeah. I mean, thinking about joy and the connections between joy and learning, and from our own experiences, I'm sure we can think of lots of examples of being at school, and the things that we remember, the things that we learn, are often the things that we enjoyed the most, the teachers that we connected with the most, and the lessons that were the most fun. Those were the bits that have stayed with us all this time, and yet, you know, maybe lots of other stuff that we learned, you know, just for the test and wasn't particularly interesting, you know, our brains have you know, thrown that bit out now and you know, replaced that precious real estate with something else. because if it didn't make sense in our lives and it didn't have a place and it didn't bring us joy, then what was the purpose of it, I guess. And I know that we learn, you know, we definitely learn in in times of emergency, I guess. You know, we can be very efficient learners if we need to in terms of emergency, but in terms of long, the information that stays with us, joy is so important, I think, isn't it, in terms of helping cement that information in our brains. You know, we remember that.
You know, I think about, so I guess the equivalent when kids are a bit older to the idea of being out at the park and being seen at the park and people questioning that. I notice, and Haley, I don't know if you can relate to this at all, but as my kids have gotten older, when you're talking to people about how your kids are or what your kids are doing, there is an assumption that when they get into the high school years, that it should be really hard and not very joyful, which is kind of weird because there's also a paradox that high school are these great years. So there's this idea that there are these great things like sports teams and prom and student government and those sorts of pieces, but that also they shouldn't be feeling too much joy. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, we were talking before about the piece that I wrote in the Stories of Unschooling Families community. And I think it was called, Do We Deserve to Be Joyful? And I think the reason that that popped into my head was that we were having a conversation, like my family was somewhere with another couple of families and they had children around the same age as my daughter. And they were just talking about how just the pressure and the pressure of high school, the pressure of some of the courses, it didn't sound very joyful in the way they were talking about it, but you almost feel like you can't, it's accepted and it's kind of valued for it not to be very joyful. So I find it's an odd conversation when you have a child who, or a teen who is really exploring a lot of those same interests in a very joyful way. So this person had a child who was in like an art school. And so the assumption is, oh, they're in this art school. How exciting, what a privilege, how wonderful. And so they were asking the teen about, you know, how's school going? And you're in this wonderful program. And the teen wasn't, they were like, oh, you know, they weren't loving it. And they didn't carry on about it, but they definitely were clear that they weren't really enjoying it. And so it was interesting to watch the adult's reaction. So you had on one hand, somebody who just, oh, well, of course you are. It's, you know, it's this wonderful opportunity. It's this wonderful art school. What do you, of course you are. What a great opportunity. I wish I could have done that. And you're so good in the arts and blah, blah, blah. And so just kind of rushing to tell them they didn't actually feel that way. How silly, right? So it was really invalidating. To me, it was just very invalidating of what the teen was saying. But it also showed me how uncomfortable people are with, I guess, people not being happy, but also with not being happy with kind of the status quo. Like, this is what we all do. Of course you're happy. You've even got like an extra bit with this arts program. And then there was somebody who was very, like just very kind and very sensitive and saying, oh, you know, that's too bad. This piece sounds hard. Or, but it was sort of the idea of you'll get through, you know, hang in. We've all had to do it. Hang in, you'll get through. And then there was somebody else who came in with kind of the standard, well, that's actually good. It's good to do things we don't like in life because life is full of hard things and this is really good practice, right? And I think in the piece of writing in the community, I described it as kind of like the, I don't know, the too bad, so sad approach. It's like, this will make you stronger. And so it was interesting for me because also having a child of a similar age who's also very interested in the arts and watching her go about things in her own way. So choose courses she's interested in. You know, as you were saying, Ashley, like bring other things into it. So bring her interest in animals and like, it's also integrated, right? It's not just art class or, you know, drama class or whatever. It's all very integrated. And there's not even a really good way to describe that kind of learning. Like it's so, you know, like, for example, late last night, I'm sure she was up past midnight, she started to become interested in nature journaling, because she's really interested in wildlife conservation, but she's also really interested in art. And so somehow last night, she decided she wanted to create her own notebook, because she doesn't find the ones in the store are versatile as far as the type of paints that she wants to use. So anyway, she was YouTubing a bunch of stuff. She had her sewing stuff out. She's ripping up different books and putting them into new books. And then she's sewing, like she's making the binding. And like, this is all happening at like midnight on like a Sunday night. And I don't think anybody in that room would have cared about that. Like if they said, oh, you know, how, I don't know how you describe that kind of joy. And, you know, our last conversation, we talked about flow. Like that's the other thing I saw, was so much flow in what she was doing. But I feel like if I had, and I feel this all the time when people ask about my kids, I almost don't want to talk about how much joy they have, because it just feels out of place. And when I've tried, people are kind of like, okay, yeah. I can't really describe our life when people are so boxed in. So I don't know.
I love that so much, Erin. It makes me think, I think we've talked about it here before, how like when someone asks how the kids learn and we're like, I don't know where to start. I don't know. Like, how much time do you have? How interested are you actually? Because I can attempt to explain what we do to you, but if you're not that interested, it's too much to explain. But what a word that came to mind when you were talking about the way your daughter learns is, and not knowing how to describe it, the one word that kept coming to me while you were talking was like individualized. So to me, like, we're all different. We're all unique. We know this, all of us, regardless of age. So to be able to have like an individualized education, and I don't love the way that sounds, but that to me, that's how I make sense of it, is we're all so different. And if we have the opportunity and the space to dive into something that we're interested in, but do it our own way, like that's what I heard, like your daughter was, you know, really individualizing what worked best for her. To me, like, what a great environment to do anything in, and especially to learn something. And rather than like trying to fit into something, fit into school, fit into a classroom, fit into a course that maybe you picked, or fit into a curriculum, because I know, like, as unschoolers and self-directed learners, that can include all of those things, right? If the learner picks a curriculum they want to try, or a course they want to sign up for, or class or whatever, that can be a really good thing. But I think what might be a common experience, my guys aren't really at the stage, so I don't know, not really speaking from experience, but I could see you still have to try to fit into something, and that could be fine. I could see that working really well at times, but I can definitely see how to have that time and space to really just, and not just to have the time and space to do like what your daughter is doing, like really individualize and set this up to work for her. But to have the support, that would be a big piece for me in my own personality. Is especially in the society where that's not where a lot of people are learning, especially as a teenager, to know that someone is in relationship with you, that you, you know, have a strong connection with. So a parent, but it could be someone else, supporting you and cheering you on and saying, oh my gosh, like, I admire how you're going about this. And not everyone would need that. But for myself, that would probably reassure me, I guess, in what I'm doing, and almost give me, it's like having like a little cheerleader, right? And I think sometimes that we need that, because even though it's like we're the individual learner and we want to do things our way, we don't want to necessarily do it in isolation. So having someone, do you know what, does that make sense? Like, just, that's just like another little thing as you were talking, that would be, I just think that's such a beautiful way to learn, especially, I mean, at any age, but especially as a teenager, I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree, Ashley. And I'm also thinking, so she is a person who likes to have courses. But again, they're very she'll come across something and she's like, oh, I have been wanting to I've heard about this and I haven't learned this technique. I'd like to get this course, or I would like to strengthen my skills in this area. So yeah, she is a person, like you're saying, like it can encompass all those things. She is a person who does that. And yet, even though those courses are probably taught by people who are, probably more experts in their field, they're actually doing the thing than necessarily a high school teacher would be, they're still somehow, because it's chosen and because there's freedom around it and because there's joy around it, I still feel like it's not validated in the same way. It's still hard to bring up in a conversation. Like it's a little bit easier that she does like some of these structured pieces, but it's still not, like you're right. Even when we're feeling passionate and joyful about something and we can be individualized, but it is nice to have some partnering and some validation and some company, even in sharing our interests. Mm-hmm. It's been interesting for me as they've gotten older to see how that park piece that you guys are talking about, I feel like it's the same thing. It's just a different stage now. Yeah.
And you can't deny the kind of effort and attention and initiative and all those things that your daughter is displaying by, you know, what you've just, you know, described to us. All those things are there, aren't they? She's taking initiative and she's being creative and she's coming up with her own ideas and she's committing to it and getting stuff done, isn't she? She's, you know, she's being productive. It's all really good stuff, isn't it? It's just a shame that some things are valued in a different way, isn't it? Just because they're maybe not in that structured environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do wonder if there's I wonder even if my hesitation in talking, maybe, you know, if people are asking what are we up to or what are my kids up to, is my hesitation also that I don't, you almost feel a little bit badly that you're experiencing so much joy and other people seem to be so stressed out or almost indignant that they're not feeling too much joy at times, like talking about how hard things are. And I don't think it's not to take away from the fact that children are plugging away at something. So if you take a child in school who maybe is having a difficult year and they are trying to get through it and they are plugging away, I don't think, for me, it's not taking away from that effort that they're making. They are in a difficult situation and they are doing what they can to get through. But somehow it makes it all the harder to say, oh, you know, we're doing things this way and we have a lot of joy. And to your point, Haley, it's not that it isn't hard. It's not that they're not challenging themselves, but there is joy in that work. So maybe it's kind of back to that idea that work does not have to equal a lack of joy, or effort doesn't have to equal a lack of joy. But
definitely. I think there's there's a lot of things that there are a lot of elements to it, really, aren't there? And I think I think gratitude is quite closely linked to joy as well, isn't it, really? I think that if you can cultivate a kind of an attitude of gratitude, then you can often find joy, can't you, even in those really difficult situations, if it is a situation where you're having to work hard, put in a lot of effort, maybe in a grueling environment, maybe, you know, in harsh climates or cold temperatures or whatever, but you are grateful for, you know, you can find gratitude in some of those things, then joy definitely comes, doesn't it, even in difficult circumstances, I think. Or it can, obviously not always, but I think there can still be, and the fact that joy's there doesn't mean that other things aren't there, which I think I said earlier was about, which I don't know whether that seems like it doesn't make sense, but the fact that joy and sadness are not necessarily opposites, I don't think. I think there can be elements of both, can't there, in certain situations.
Yeah, I think that's a really important one, Haley. And I think like taking the time to like say these things aloud within our family and with our children can be helpful for ourselves, but also for them, and talking about how you can, I mean, actually it makes me think about the different book, like picture books I've read with my kids, 'cause they're still little, well, like 9 and 6, right? So we'll pull picture books about like having more than one feeling or emotion at a time. And I think that's really valuable, because you have to, we are experiencing that. We have these like different emotions, and so many different emotions even throughout one day. So to take the time to actually talk about what that feels like and what's going on, and I don't know if I like to use this word, but like it kind of normalizes it. Like it lets our kids know that, yeah, you can feel happy and sad at the same time. Lots of us do. And talk about examples of when that happens. But like, I love it when people, and I'm not the best at it, but I love it when people give real life examples. So I can offer one that we've a few years ago experienced, when I lost my dad unexpectedly. Which therefore like my kids lost their granddad, and my oldest was 5. So he was definitely having, you know, emotions and experiences with that. My other one was kind of too young. He was 2. But I always think, like when I was thinking about today's conversation, I was thinking like, that to me is my example of a time where there was a lot of sadness as a family, and grief. And it wasn't just like one day of sadness. Like it was an ongoing thing. And I mean, we can still have days where we're sad about that one thing. But that's what comes to mind when I think of like a heavy time where I still experience lots of joy, lots of happy moments, especially within our family and with the kids. So that's like a nice, for myself, I find that's a helpful example for me to pull from when things get really crappy and things are, you know, there's like some really heavy moments and a lot of sadness, but knowing, like just remembering, but I still had moments, many moments of joy. I don't know. I find that helpful for myself to remember that, because life, that's part of life, is those harder moments. And I think having those conversations, so I would bring it up with the kids, and I have throughout the, you know, the past few years, since losing my dad, we use that as an example of how we can be really sad about something, but it doesn't feel sad every minute of the day. And we can actually have really, you know, joyful moments too. And that's great. That's life. So that's just like an example that I find helpful. But I think it's a matter of talking, like taking the time to, not all the time, we don't talk about this stuff all the time, but making sure that we do actually, like, wait a second, have we actually like talked about, like, have we put this, like, have we said this out loud, that, you know, these are the emotions and experiences we're feeling? Because I think it helps us all feel better, because a lot of times this stuff is in our minds and it's in our children's minds. So it's helpful to be able to converse about these things with people that we're close with, so family or friends.
And I think joy is a real antidote, isn't it, to stress as well, isn't it? It's that the, you know, people talk about laughter being the best medicine or whatever, but if people do laugh together and if people can find joy, then not only is that really connecting and helping you feel closer to other people, but it also is literally helping to move those stress hormones through your body and releasing them, and, you know, get so that you're not getting to the point, like you were talking about, Erin, before about being stuck in stress for too long, which is obviously where stress becomes a problem for our bodies, doesn't it, and our minds. Whereas in small doses, stress, you know, is a good thing. Yeah, it keeps us alert and it keeps us moving, it gives us motivation. It's got lots and lots of positive points, aren't there, to stress. But it's when it gets stuck that it can become an issue, can't it? And I think joy is something that's so can be so powerful in helping to relieve stress. So that's just another little element to it, isn't it?
Well, and you know, and we're talking about how work is not mutually exclusive from joy, and so then I'm thinking, so stress isn't either. We've kind of decided, you know, how what we think the word stress means. But if I think about like even really early this morning, my eldest headed to the airport again. So he's on a plane again today. But he had a lot of things to piece together, right? Because he was picking up his friend. He has the snowboard, all his snowboard gear, all those things. And so what I could see was a combination of stress and joy. You know, really excited about going and just feeling joyful to be able to go. And yet there's still that adrenaline because you have to make sure they're on time. You know, it snowed last night. So what are the roads like? Let's not forget, you know, I mean, I didn't do any of this. He's older now, but you could see him mentally, like, making sure he had his stuff together, making sure he had his plans made. But there is joy in that stress. Now, obviously, not all stress feels joyful. But yeah, we do need that stress to get us to where we need to go. We need a certain amount of adrenaline to be helping us focus and move forward. But it's interesting how we do have certain words like work or stress that we can't imagine joy being attached to, but it really does weave its way through so many different parts of our life that we maybe just discount. But if we think back, we can think, oh no, there was a lot of joy there too.
Yeah,
or we can think of joyful times where we're like, actually, that was pretty stressful. But you, when you think of the memory, it also feels joyful. You know, like childbirth would be an example of that, right? Like you think about this joy of when you had your children, but really also there were many stressful moments, but they're all there together.
That's such a good example.
Yeah, I was just thinking about putting your body through physical stress. And I was thinking about in terms of, I don't know, doing something that's really physically demanding, like, I don't know, building a wall or something that takes a lot of stress. But I think your example of childbirth is even better, Erin, that whole thing about, you know, going through some physical stress. And I guess even, you know, exercise, people, you know, we know, don't we, that exercise releases endorphins that makes us feel joyful. You know, we feel better after we've put our bodies through a certain level of physical stress. Obviously there's a point where it gets too much and we get injured or whatever, and but up to a point, that stress is it actively brings us joy, doesn't it? It helps that cocktail of hormones in our bodies that brings us joy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, going off of that, how I was thinking about your joy list, actually, Haley, and the piece you wrote about that, because before today, I wrote my first joy list. But it made me think about how it's really helpful to think about how different people experience joy. So the way what might bring me joy, it's probably like it's different for anyone else. So like my kids, for example, right? So it was not easy at the beginning, but once I got going trying to think of what brought me joy, my list grew, and then I kind of started jotting down some things for each of my kids. I haven't done my husband yet. I don't know what that says. But I just made me really, by writing it down, think about how that's helpful, probably especially even, I mean, it would always be helpful, but I'm thinking as my kids get older and as they become teenagers too, realizing that's one thing I can do as their supporter and as their parent is pay attention to what brings them joy. This is probably another thing that Pam Larocchia talks about too. Yeah, just realizing that because we are all different, like different things bring us joy and different things. So like exercise, right? Like some people, you know, the exercise can feel not joyful at times, but overall, you know that you have lead a more joyful life because you exercise. And that might be true for someone. It's not true for me. Just thinking about how it is different. So it's helpful to think about what brings those that you're in relationship with joy, so that you can, I don't know, just help maybe, you know, if I'm thinking as my kids get older, or even now, if they're feeling a bit low, or to me coming across like they're a bit down, and I can take a step back and think, okay, what are the things that bring you joy? Like my youngest, I know, really likes to go out to like places like the zoo, like have little field day trips. We don't call them that, but like go visit somewhere that we haven't gone, or going to the movies. And I can think, you know what, we haven't done something like that in a while. Maybe he's missing that because that's something that brings him joy. Another one would be milkshakes for him. Like it can be anything, right? And then that's very different for my older, like my 9-year-old. He gets joy through connecting, which I think is a common one, connecting with other people. There's the whole introvert extrovert thing, so it's different again for everyone, but his would definitely be, you know, if he's seeming low, if this happened last week, he was a bit down and I hadn't really picked up on it much, and then the moment his dad said, oh, what about having your friend over today, oh my gosh, you could just see a switch in him, and he just, and I noticed that and I thought, oh, and it made perfect sense because that's something that brings him joy and always had, just that opportunity to connect with other people. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we were talking earlier, weren't we, about the whole thing of how this is a practice, and it helps to, yeah, to try and be intentional. And I'm so grateful that Joylist was something we discovered really early on in home education. And I wish I could remember where I found the idea from. But we did that right at the beginning. We all sat around the kitchen table with loads of craft materials, and we made these, you know, we all made our own individual joy lists and stuck glitter on them and thought about, you know, what kinds of things brought us joy, going to the park. And I remember one of my things on there was about shooting basketball hoops. That's one of the things I really like doing if I'm at the park. And some really simple things. And obviously there are, like you say, you know, things like going to the zoo and stuff, and you know, and maybe, you know, one-off, or not one-off events, but sort of the things that happen that don't happen so often, like when you have everybody around for your birthday, or, you know, special things. But then there are also really simple things like, you know, for me, when somebody brings me a cup of tea, that I'm getting joy, you know, every day I get lots of joy from that. That's, you know, I'm lucky that I've got lots of people here who do bring me a cup of tea. But it's something we go back to regularly. And in fact, my youngest daughter was doing a joy list the other day because she's had quite a few days. She's been a little bit poorly, and she'd had a few days of the, you know, thinking, oh, I'm feeling a bit bored. And the word bored kept coming up. And so we talked again about, oh, maybe we need to do a new joy list. Let's go back and think about, you know, what are some of the things that are bringing you joy at the moment? And I just think it's such a helpful, it can really sort of brighten up your days, I think, if you have that, just that tangible list that you can go back and look at and think, oh yeah, I'd forgotten. Yeah, which seems silly, doesn't it? Why would we forget the things that bring us joy? But we do, don't we? We get busy, and you know, we have so many demands on our time, I suppose, and so many things going on that you just forget, don't you, sometimes, the simple little things that can bring you joy. So yeah, we love that in our house.
And I think the idea of making lists, it just really prioritizes it, and it shows the kids that you prioritize their joy and you value the things that they're interested in. Yeah, and I think doing one for ourselves is so interesting, because I don't know about you, but that's not something that, I don't know, that I don't remember being asked what brought me joy. You know, I'm thinking especially in like a learning environment, you know, that's kind of a new thought. So to sit down and think about what that is for yourself too is really fun. You must have, that must have been so fun, Haley, to kind of kick things off that way.
Yeah, I think it really helped to yeah, it really helped to kind of set the tone, I suppose, in so many different ways. Not only was it about, you know, we want this home education thing to be fun, but also it was, I suppose, yeah, that the idea that they could see straight away that, yeah, we were interested in what they thought, and we wanted to do things in our lives that mattered, and that, yeah, learning. And that, I suppose, we valued that idea of learning being fun. And I think there were so many yeah, so many different ways that it set us off on quite a good footing, really. And like I say, it's something that we definitely go back to again and again.
One thing, and we've kind of talked about it, but I don't think we've used the term mental health, which is when I really think about why we choose to like live and learn this way and do and unschool. Like to me, like what you're talking about and what we've now started to do with this joy list, it is a simple thing to kind of sit down and do, but it really does. There's so much more involved with what's going on there. And I keep thinking about how this is one way that is like something you can do as a family to kind of, I don't know how to put this. I haven't thought this through, but like, I'm just thinking how to be intentional with our children's mental health. And you know what, this might help is I think in that blog post, Haley, where you talk about Joylist, you mentioned how, actually I might've wrote it down about how, great to lead by example for, these are not your words, I don't think, but to follow, to like help our children, guide our children to follow their joy and practice self-care. So to me, I start connecting it with like, our mental well-being, our emotional well-being, and how we feel as a person and how we as parents, like what you were saying, value that for our children. But this, I think, is such a great example of something that like every family could do. And like you're saying, it can be like an ongoing practice, but it just, it keeps, I keep thinking about how, what a great way to, I don't have the words for it right now, but just to kind of protect, I don't know how to put it, but like protect their mental well-being. Like it's just another way to support that area, which is really important, I think, to all families.
Yeah, I think it's a powerful model, isn't it, in terms of seeing us, you know, if we do sit there and make our own joy list with our children, for them to see that we are valuing our own self-care and taking care of ourselves, that's a powerful model for them. And I'm not great at that, you know, lots of us are not great at that. And I, you know, I've got two, almost three adult children, and they do say to me sometimes when I'm forgetting the fact that I need to take care of myself, they say to me, remember, Mum, you know, what you do is important for, you know, you are a model for us. And if you're not taking care of yourself, then why would you expect us to take care of ourselves? And you know, I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, haven't we, about how if you want your children to read and you want your children to do, I don't know, to take care of themselves with exercise and things like that, then, you know, one of the most powerful ways to do that is for you to do it yourself. And if you don't want to do it yourself, then I guess you want to question why you want your children to do it. You know, maybe that, you know, maybe there's a bit of de-schooling around all that, but yeah, it's not always easy to take care of ourselves, is it? But again, this is another thing that I guess helps us to live with intention and reminds us, because, you know, sometimes we get lost in what's happening day to day, and just reminds us that it's really important to look for that joy and to take care of ourselves. Yeah. And that we want our children to do that on an ongoing basis.
I love looking at different sort of blog posts or social media accounts of quite a few homeschool families who you see building joy into their week. So whether that's, you know, a particular day that they do, like, I don't know, like a poetry tea time or a baking and whatever. And I mean, it's only fun as long as everybody's interested. But what I like about it is there's like an intention of putting joy into the week and just really intentionally. I guess I think about it as kind of like protecting time. Kind of protecting time to really enjoy themselves and do something together. And the other thing that I just find really inspiring, because I think what I can get caught in is, I guess, back to this idea of like, do we deserve joy? And so my head can spiral, my mind can spiral into like, okay, but if I, you know, if I'm too relaxed, or if I'm, you know, it's kind of like the what if, what if, what if. And I mean, that's a big part of the conversation with self-directed learning and unschooling is, okay, so people are enjoying themselves and they're choosing things they love, but is there a danger in that on down the road, right? So I can get caught in that sometimes, not so much just about unschooling, but I guess just about life, like just about life. And so it's been really inspiring to me to try to remember people, well, some people in our own lives that I think, you know, they really enjoy their life and they are not apologetic about it. Like my husband has a friend who enjoys his life so much. Like he is just so full of joy and he lives a regular life, except not, because he's always doing these fun things and just talks with such joy about, you know, going camping or making a meal, or I don't know, he just really lives life. And I think, no, see, there's an example of somebody who has interests and he makes time for them and he dives into his joy and he's fine. He's surviving. He's making quite good money. Like he's still living a responsible life and he's joyful and he's bringing other people joy. Like I'm feeling joyful just talking about his joy, because it's really fun to see other people doing things that, you know, that they're passionate about or that they enjoy doing. So there is something like very contagious about it. And it reminds me, Haley, of, I mean, a lot of your premise with the taking a kinder path is that idea that, I mean, I'm putting this in my words, but the feeling that I have is just that kindness kind of spreads, right? Like we're kind, it leads other people to want to be kind. It's just sort of a cycle. And I think it's similar with joy. I think that when we're feeling joyful, people want to be around us, you know, and we're also drawn to people that are feeling joyful. So there really is kind of this energy that circulates, and there are certain people when you're in their presence, you can feel that. So I find it helpful to kind of keep those examples in my mind of like, just people that I know who are really, it's kind of an overstated thing now, like living your best life. I don't know, that's maybe a bit cliche, but I guess that's kind of the closest thing I can think of to describe it.
And I think it comes back to that thing that I said earlier about being an antidote. I think if we are feeling guilty about being joyful, then maybe that helps to remind ourselves that actually the more joy that we put out into the world, that's a good thing. That gives, when we're being joyful, somehow that for some people, they might find that a kind of permission for them to be joyful. And then, as you say, it being contagious, Erin, that can be really powerful, I think, can't it? And a knock-on effect. And I think for our children as well, it's really important for them to see us being joyful, because, you know, what a dreary life it would be if they never saw us being joyful. That would be, you know, sad. So hopefully that helps to ward off that guilt that sometimes we feel about joy being frivolous or that it's a waste of time or whatever. It's just not, is it? It's so powerful for so many reasons, and I think we should try and embrace it as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. And I think similarly to the idea that we can feel joy even if parts of our lives are tricky, like we can feel two things at the same time, I think yes, parts of our lives are always going to be tricky, even while other pieces are going well. And I think similar to that, in our family, I find that happens. So, you know, I often think people will say, oh, how are your kids? And I'm like, well, it depends on who you're asking about, right? Because you can have a child who's really just really having a flow of a time and things are going really well. And you can have another child who's struggling. And that can be over a period of time, or it can be on a particular date. So I think, yeah, continuing to model that, we can pull that joy out, it's not so black and white that it's a bad day or a good day. We can, that helps me sort of really experience the good times with one child and still hold space for somebody else's difficult times, knowing that there will be pockets of joy we can pull out there. Because that's, I find that's a complex part of being a parent, is people are not always on the same page as to where they're.
Yeah, definitely. And I, and you've just reminded me then about something earlier. I think it was you, Erin, that we, you, when we were talking about the happy ever after, and you were saying about how there's a kind of a resolution in those fairy tales or those films or whatever sometimes. And that idea that life is kind of done, or it's, and I think that's a really interesting thing to think about in terms of unschooling and learning as well. This idea that there is never a point at which our children are done, or our learning is done, and that's it. Then now we've kind of learned everything. That just doesn't happen, does it? We're continually learning. And just because we haven't learned something up to this point, there is always the potential for us to learn it in the future. And I think sometimes that's really important to hang on to as well, that you don't have to have got everything done by now. You know, it is a continual process that keeps going. And that's what we want. We want our children to keep learning, don't we? And we want ourselves to keep learning, because, you know, none of us, you know, we're not all right, are we? Although we all think that, you know, to a degree, we're all, you know, we've all got the space and capacity to evolve. I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, however enlightened we might believe we are at some point or another, there is always more to learn, and there is always somebody else who can give us a new perspective or a new reframe. And you know, and that's the great thing, isn't it? That learning just goes on. And again, like joy, we just need to embrace that and try not to worry about what we haven't learned so far, but know that it is a process that will go on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I feel like there are going to be days that, you know, sometimes we just can't imagine where to find joy, and that can just be okay. Like sometimes a day just is what it is. And, yeah, because I don't think, for me, it's like I don't want to get onto a treadmill of that. There's this term toxic happiness, where you're almost chasing joy or chasing happiness. And I don't, for me, it's not about that either. There are those days where you're just like, you know, this is kind of a write-off. And I think that's okay. It just is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of shades in life, isn't there? Kind of that whole light and shade thing, and that we, you know, ups and downs and whatever. Life is twists and turns. That's what life is about, isn't it? And I think there's that helps, doesn't it? On the really dark, sort of difficult days, that can help to know that there's, you know, things are likely to change. Things are always, that's one thing we can count on, I guess, isn't it? Change really is coming.
Yeah. That reminds me of another thing I was listening to recently, where someone was talking about supporting our kids and learning that they can sit in discomfort. So like, as we're having this conversation about joy, I think we're really talking about how, you know, it's not about figuring out the answer on how to live joyfully every minute of every day, but it's figuring out how to be this way for ourselves, but then model it for our kids, in that there are, you know, no one's got it figured out. I remember growing up thinking like, okay, once I finish this school year, once I get that job, once I get this, you know, once I get to this next stage in life, I'll have it figured out and I will be happy. And that's just, you know, like you're saying, no one ever gets to that destination. It doesn't work that way. But realizing, like that antidote, I guess, right? Like realizing that there is discomfort, that's part of life. And as parents, we're not trying to just remove all discomfort from our children's lives, but letting them know, like making sure that they are having opportunities for joy and supporting that. But also when they are not feeling joyful, you know, whether it's just a bad day or a more tricky time, even just being in relationship with us, there's can be joy found in that. But letting them know that it does change, like what you're saying, Haley, it does. We're not going to be stuck in it. We can have space for this. We can acknowledge it. We can feel it. And this is reality right now. And, you know, validate all those crummy feelings that we're having. But that, yeah, like that piece of just knowing that it will change. There's still joy and we'll get there, I think, is like just really healthy for young people to have an understanding of.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So does anything else come to mind for either of you?
No, I don't think so. I feel like we covered lots.
Yeah. I feel like Haley, you just have to make sure we link your post, your joyless post. Yeah, I think you have more than one, maybe. I'll have to have a look, but yeah. So make sure we, because I think that, if I'm remembering that post, so there's really good food for thought about joy, but then I just love how concretely you bring people through the opportunity to create the joy list. So, and it's funny you say you can't remember where you heard it, because I thought you had coined, I thought it was your invention. So,
yeah, well, I don't know if I'm guessing I read it somewhere, and I don't know if what I read, they called it a joy list. I can't remember, but you know, whoever it was, I'm very grateful to them for the whole concept of this being something to, something to do as a family. 'Cause it's,
And I'm grateful that you conceptualized it that way, because I think it just nice and concrete. Thank you both, and have a great rest of your day.
And you too.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.